Now entering Nerdist.com.
Welcome, one and all, to Maltin on Movies. I'm Leonard Maltin.
And I'm Jesse Maltin.
And we are here with, well, we're here with somebody that if you don't know,
you live under a rock.
Even by voice,
you
but certainly by face, you live under
rock.
Many rocks.
A boat, many rocks. Many rocks.
His name is Ed Begley Jr. And Ed, we're delighted to have you here.
Thank you, Leonard. Thank you, Jesse, both for having me.
Thank you for coming. My dad and I were talking about all the ways that people could possibly have seen you at this point. Because I said, not only are you on The Simpsons, playing yourself, talking about environmentalism,
right,
which is a wonderful episode. My dad said, you've said before, is the one thing your kids think is the coolest.
It was my ascent to stardom, not working
right?
with Jack Nicholson, Meryl
nope.
Streep, none of that. They
nope.
thought that was fine. Don't get me wrong. They
nope.
were impressed.
Nope.
But now, Dad, you're a rock star. You're on The Simpsons.
You're on The Simpsons.
And then on a second time, I must be big.
You
That's
did it.
It.
So you did that. And then you were the best gag, one of the best gags possibly the Independent Spirit Awards has ever done.
Oh, yeah.
Where they pull back the curtain and you're on a bicycle powering the entire
That's
event.
Right. Rainn Wilson says the power's dimming. They had an effect where the lights went down a little bit. We got to get this back on track. Ed, please. He pulls the curtain back and I'm there riding a bike.
And it is.
Furiously.
It remains one of the funniest.
You're very
one
kind.
Of the funniest gags I've ever had.
No, it's great.
And then on top of all of that, you've been in movies with people like Meryl Streep and Roseanne. A movie with Meryl Streep and Roseanne. I don't know how you survived it, but God bless you, you did.
It was fantastic.
It was
the most fun you could ever imagine.
I do love that movie.
Campy, funny movie. I had a great time. It was the last of the 80s. We did it in 89, and it was a lot of fun, and still pretty amusing to me.
Oh, mm-hmm. No. Honestly, it survives just fine. And then my dad was telling me how he thinks of you.
Well, it's just, I mean, I just saw you in Ghostbusters most recently.
Thank you.
And I know that you just did an episode of Grace and Frankie.
Correct.
With Lily Tomlin and Jane Fonda and my pal Baron Vaughn, among others. And so not only are you working as much as ever, it seems, and as visible as ever, but you've been that visible for a long time, and you're not old.
Oh, yes, I am.
No, you're not.
You're very kind.
No, we're the same age.
You're the same age,
so,
thusly you are not old.
Okay, then I'm not
you're
old.
You're not
I'll
old.
Go, I'll go that way with it, absolutely.
But you're a little older than me.
But
like
for all
months,
of these accolades, though, what did you say to me in the car? What did you say that you think that you've seen him?
Oh, well, Ed, we lived for many years in Toluca Lake. We remember seeing you speed skating on our street. We've
yes.
seen you bicycling in the neighborhood.
Yes.
Yep.
And one time, we had a lovely chat while riding the Metro. I was on my way to jury duty.
Right.
And you were going to connect to the other line to take it out to the Culver Studios.
Because that is correct, the Expo line.
Because you believe in public transit, of course. And so I know you as a person who walks the walk and talks the talk and all of that, on top of your many talents and skills. And I admire that so much. And going back to what Jesse was saying, you have what not everybody does have. You have a sense of humor about yourself and about life. And you see the lighter side and the quirkier side of things.
Yeah,
and we are consumers of your products.
Thank you.
We have
all
many
the Begley's
of your products.
Responsible
we have
cleaning products.
Many
very
of them
nice
at home.
Of you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I love you guys. You're making me feel very good today.
That's good.
Right back at you for riding the subway. When I saw you there, I just was all aglow because it was so nice that someone like Leonard Maltin would get on the subway and take that downtown. I was very impressed with that.
That's the most sensible way to go downtown.
I agree.
Especially in rush hour.
I know.
I was going to say,
who live in the Studio City, Toluca Lake area, mm-hmm. it just is so easy. I don't know why everybody doesn't do it.
I know. Well, it's common sense, and that's what you really expound is common sense values, common sense this and that. I know you referred to your father, and we'll talk about your dad in just a minute, as a conservative in the truest sense of that, with the small C.
Right.
I mean, a large C too, as it turns out, but a small C. Conservative. My dad, too. My dad, who was a child of the Depression, never, and I inherited this from him, unfortunately or unfortunately, He believed that when God made envelopes that were meant to be used twice, especially big manila envelopes.
I love this guy right away.
You say and twice as if it's yeah, 13, 14 times. Yes,
it doesn't end at two, does it?
When I was a kid, if a letter should happen to come in the mail and the stamp wasn't canceled.
Canceled, right. I remember this.
You steamed that stamp off of the envelope to reuse with a piece of glue on another envelope.
I love this guy.
Yeah, that was my dad.
Now, that was my dad.
You wouldn't have called him an ecologist. You wouldn't have called him an environmentalist.
He never used that term, my dad.
No, he was frugal.
He was frugal. No, he was a conservative that liked to conserve.
Here's my question.
That. Yeah.
Did your dad fold up tinfoil?
Absolutely. And string. He saved string and tinfoil.
My grandmother is the first, his mother is the first person who ever did it. But my dad to this day, if there's tinfoil that looks like it can be salvaged, he will gently, and the first time he did it, I went, you are your mother.
Yeah.
You are your mother. It was so
damn
funny.
I hate waste.
Can't waste.
Just hate wasting.
His folks came over in a boat from Ireland. My grandparents came over in a boat from Ireland. You know, my dad lived through the Great Depression. That's just the way you did things.
Yeah.
Sure. There was no question about it.
None.
No debate. That
was it.
So
when Earth Day came around in 1970, this novel idea of doing all that, I went, wait, I've been doing this my whole life.
Right.
Earth Day, sign me up. You want to clean up the air, too, and clean up the water? Okay, I'll sign on to that, too. But I've been doing all this other stuff my whole life.
Amazing. Now, speaking of things you've been doing your whole life, I was looking at your credits, and I'm not going to keep throwing credits at you, but it's a little daunting to realize. Now, I grew up as kind of a TV junkie.
Me too.
I was hooked on TV as a kid. Couldn't stop watching. Couldn't stop watching. I mean, I love comic books, too, and other things, but I love television. And at different times in my life, I've fallen in and out of love with television. And now we're in a television renaissance, people say, which I think is true. There's a lot of great, great work being
done. This, I think,
now
is like the platinum age of television. We saw the golden age. I think what we're seeing now with Breaking Bad and shows like that, it's amazing. And The Night Of, I'm just so impressed with TV today.
Yeah. So you have been a participant in every one of those eras of television because you were on My Three Sons, Adam 12, Mannix, Ironside, shows like that. Old school TV, you might say.
Yeah.
You were on the next generation of shows. You were on Maud, Norman Lear's groundbreaking show, Maud. You were on Wonder Woman, Laverne and Shirley, Charlie's Angels. You're on the next generation of shows, Roseanne, Sabrina the Teenage Witch, The Nanny. You had regular stints on Room 222, Mary Hartman, another Norman Lear creation.
Right.
Battlestar Galactica. Seventh Heaven, which ran forever. 6 Feet Under, another leap forward in television.
Yes, I agree.
Veronica Mars, Monk. Children's Hospital, another step forward.
Right.
In kind of anti-establishment television. Arrested Development, the poster child of
Mitch Hurwitz, postmodern
TV comedy.
I agree.
Portlandia, you can't get much more contemporary than that. And now Better Call Saul and even Lady Dynamite, Maria Bamford's new show. And Ed, you're a fixture in all of this. Congratulations.
Yeah, right.
I'll take it. And I feel so lucky. Yeah. I'm just so blessed to have worked now for this many years. It's coming up on 50 years. Next year it will be 50 years. Mm-hmm. I've been working in Screen Actors Guild and, you know, after shows. Mm-hmm. It's just amazing that it's that long.
Well, I just want to know, how did you have time for kids, and do you sleep?
You know,
I mean, you managed to make some kids, so good job, you.
I have two wonderful grown kids, 38 and 37. I've got a 16-year-old, second marriage. I have a lovely child with my current wife, Rochelle, and I'm just so lucky to keep doing it. But I have this wonderful schedule. You know how it is with an itinerant actor.
Yeah.
You know, when you're not on a regular series like I was on St. Elsewhere, you know, you work Monday, then you work Thursday, and then maybe you work Friday. And even on St. Elsewhere's like that because it was such a big cast, Leonard.
Yeah. Sure.
You know, you'd work Monday, Tuesday, and then maybe Friday, you know, whatever. You'd work 3 days a week. So we moved up to Ojai, had all the benefits of living in beautiful Ojai, and then would come into town a few days a week when I needed to work. And I've just been blessed now for 50 years. I just hope they don't get on to me and realize I have no idea what I'm doing. Then it'll all be over.
But let's turn the corner a little bit. You also started out as a stand-up comic. And you were very much on the early part of the curve here in L.A. on the comedy scene and the improv scene, and which obviously informs your acting and informs your comedic sense as an actor in anything you do. So did you have ambitions as a kid? I mean, your father was a very prominent actor, an Academy Award-winning actor, a Tony yeah. Award-winning actor.
Correct.
Did that make you want to follow in his footsteps, or were you rebellious enough that you wanted to go in some other direction?
You know, I thought I was rebellious, but to be honest, Leonard, I think if my dad would have been a plumber, I'd be fitting pipe now. I wanted to do what he did.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
When I went into Screen Actors Guild, I want to change my name to James Begley. I didn't want to be Ed Begley Jr. because I didn't mm-hmm. want to trade in his name. And then I mm-hmm. woke up and, you know, got a reality check, and I realized it would be very good to be Ed Begley Jr. because
yes.
people would, A, remember me,
yes.
and, B, have something to talk about in the interview. It's a job interview, like any job in the world.
Yeah.
You go and you have an interview, and you see how you do.
Yeah.
They have something to talk about. I work with your dad in the Philco Playhouse, and your dad and I did a Kraft Presents show, and I loved your dad. He was here, top of page 8. Let's start with it, Eddie. You know, you got something. It right away opens
yeah.
the door, and I
sure.
accepted that and embraced that at some point, and things have been very good ever since.
But that is... I mean, that takes a lot of confidence because, I mean, I can, in a different way,
right.
being a Malton, you know, everybody, I think since I was probably 7 years old, people have said, do you want to be like your dad? Do you want to follow in his footsteps? And the answer is no, because the man is a machine. The history that lives inside of his head.
It's amazing.
It is amazing.
Ow. Oh, it's hurting now.
It's hurting your head. He's getting a film history headache.
I don't
headache.
Know how he retains
He's getting,
all the facts he
I
does.
Don't, I'll tell you how he does, because he doesn't leave any room for things like remembering to put on a belt. or you know, he doesn't remember any of those things.
I'm just checking. I did today.
You did. No, I'm very yeah. proud of you. You
yeah.
managed.
Thank you.
But, you know, it was funny because for a short time I was telling people just my middle name. And then I realized that obviously I love my dad. And I
love mine.
I love my dad, and I think he's just swell. But also I'm very pleased to carry that name. But it takes time, and I think that it's not necessarily immediate, because there is a point for anybody where you go, well, I don't want to just be known as number two.
Right.
You know? But it doesn't hurt when someone's asking me what my credentials are for knowing anything about film, and I go, well, you see, from birth, I was tortured and sat in front of an old screen, a pull-down screen with a 35-millimeter projector going next to my head.
16.
Yeah.
Details. I'm sorry.
Details.
Honey. I'm sorry.
We're both lucky. You and I are both lucky to be in that atmosphere at a young age. That's the way I finally woke up to.
Mm-hmm. Now, you once told me that you actually got to – did you tour with your father in the national company? Or did you accompany him?
No, I did.
Hurt the Wind or?
You're remembering an important part of it, Leonard. I went on the road with him when he was doing Advisor Consent and on – Look Homeward Angel, just mm-hmm. as a backstage kid, you know, just mm-hmm. kind of picking up the programs after the show and doing stuff like that, uh-huh. just helping out for free because I was Ed Begley's son. But I was not in any of those plays with him. I wish, but I went to Boston and New Haven and Philadelphia and Washington, D.C.
Wow.
with those two plays, and I was in heaven to be on the road with my dad, to be at my dad's office.
Yeah.
Was just heaven on earth. And then whatever level of zeal I had about show business was increased, you know, tenfold at that point.
Of course.
Yeah.
Now, if you don't know Ed's father, and if you don't have a mental picture of Ed's father, well, you all have devices now. Use your device. Go and take a look. You'll recognize his face. If you know, you know, great old movies and vintage TV shows. The first thing I think of with your dad, of course, is 12 Angry Men.
Correct.
The movie version of 12 Angry Men.
Correct.
With Henry Fonda and one of the greatest casts ever assembled.
Amazing cast.
Just, you know, extraordinary and a perfect part for him. Just a perfect part. Suited him to a T.
He was so good in that.
The Academy singled him out for his performance in Tennessee Williams' Sweet Bird of Youth. That's what won him an Academy Award.
Correct.
And where does that Oscar live nowadays?
It sits on my cabinet and my prime position of filing cabinet in my office.
Oh, nice.
And his Tony as well.
Oh, how
nice. He and Paul Muni from Inherit the Wind and Sweet Bird of Youth. He was a highly decorated and, you know, wonderful actor. I'm just proud to be a son.
Now, my wife and I love listening to old-time radio shows, which doesn't put us exactly in the mainstream, but we do. And one of the shows we listened to is Richard Diamond.
Richard Diamond, Private Detective.
Private Detective with Dick Powell, which was a very popular show created by Blake Edwards long before his film career took off.
I forgot that, Leonard. That's right. That
he
was
created
Blake
it,
Edwards.
Wrote it.
He's a machine.
I knew that fact many decades
ago. He's a machine.
You're unbelievable. I forgot that.
And your dad was a regular on that show.
Yes, he was.
And for a number of years, playing Sergeant Levinson.
Yes.
And or Lieutenant, I forget.
I can't remember.
Yeah, yeah. But
and Aldrich Family, and he did a bunch of them. He was the first Charlie Chan.
That's the weirdest one. He was Charlie Chan on the radio.
Go figure.
Irish-American Ed Begley was Charlie Chan on the radio.
Which is one of our – that's a family favorite. Charlie Chan, both radio and
well, mostly movies, yes.
But
but did you get to meet the great Paul Muni, with whom he co-starred?
Here's the saddest thing ever. Yes, I met him, Leonard, but here's how I met him. We'd be going up to San Francisco – and we'd stop in Santa Barbara, stay at the Montecito Hotel, and we'd go visit these old people. I was always, like, impatient. Why are we seeing this guy, Paul, and this woman, Bella? Who are Paul and Bella? Can we just get moving? I want to get up and ride the cable cars. What are we doing here? And then one day I realized, after the last visit had already occurred with the great Paul, I was in the presence of greatness, you know, Fugitive from a Chain Gang and, you know, all the brilliant movies that he did. I never saw him in Inherit the Wind because I was too young to be brought to the theater at that point, or they thought I was too young. But I realized I had met Paul Muni, and I just was kicking myself the rest of my days that I hadn't asked him any question about anything because he's a genius.
Yeah, yeah. Quite an actor who's not as much spoken of today as he should be. But if you want to see great performance, watch I Am a Fugitive from a Chain Gang.
Brilliant.
It's a 1932 movie. It's an old movie that has such incredible power to this day.
Yes.
And part of it is his searing performance.
Searing, I agree.
As a man who's been railroaded for a crime and is serving on a Southern chain gang. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Very impressive.
It sure is. Now, a lot of people got to know you on a really solid basis when you got that terrific role on one of the great TV series of all time, Saint Elsewhere, a show that before we had DVRs was what they now call appointment television, or used to call appointment television. You simply had to see it. You couldn't miss an episode. It was just so great. Did you guys know how good it was when you were doing it?
We did. When I read the pilot episode, I went in and read for a part. I did not get the part of Dr. White, played by Terrence Knox, who winds up being killed in the third episode. And I was quite bereft that I hadn't gotten that part. Then they threw me a bone and said, there's an episode they'd still like you to be in the pilot, and maybe an episode thereafter playing this Dr. Ehrlich, you know. And Ehrlich had like one line or something. I said, I want to be part of this because the script was so good. I'd never seen anything like that, you know, in television. And I met Bruce Paltrow. I was very smitten with him. And then something happened. I had a scene with Bill Daniels and, you know the Mutt and Jeff, you know, the tall Ehrlich and the shorter Bill Daniels, and him berating me as he did. They saw that and liked that. The writers saw that and liked it and decided they would write more for that. And they said, we want to make you a fully reoccurring character. And then one episode into that recurring, they said, we want to make you a regular. And I jumped at the chance, of course. And then Ehrlich became a better part than any part I ever read for. Mm-hmm. It was a change in my life. Bruce Paltrow changed my life.
Mm. And what did it mean being on a show like that that had that kind of profile? That high profile at a time before, again, I have to say, this is before the cable channel, 200-channel universe.
Correct.
It was still the days of primarily people watching ABC, NBC, CBS.
Yep.
And cable was just peeking around the corner.
Correct.
So these shows had an enormous audience. It was not as fragmented as it is today. So when you were on a show like Saint Elsewhere, that was the buzz. People were talking about it. Hill Street Blues came first, right?
Correct.
At the MTM studio, and then came Hill Street Blues. Wow, what a show.
Yeah.
And what an ensemble.
It was great. Denzel Washington was in it, David Morris, Bill Daniels, Bonnie Bartlett, Christina Pickles, great actors.
Yeah.
Ed Flanders, Norman Lloyd.
Yeah.
I mean, just amazing people and wonderful directors and, you know, incredible scripts. You know, Tom Fontana and those other great writers.
Mm-hmm.
Josh Brand and John Falsey wrote the pilot and were involved in the first season of it, the first 9 episodes, I guess, or 13 or whatever they did at first. And it was an amazing time for me. I had been a working actor for 15 years at that point, was literally thinking of leaving L.A. and moving to Atlanta or something, Leonard, to be a big fish in a small pond. Maybe I'll try to be a weatherman there and get a local talk show or something, and then I can, when all the Hollywood people that I know well, come to Atlanta to film or do a rock concert. I knew a lot of musicians, too, from my stand-up years. I'll get them on my show, and, honey, let's put the house into escrow. Put it up in the market, I said to my wife. Let's put it up in the market, and we're going to move to Atlanta. Ring. Hold on, let me take this call. What? Oh, it's my agent, honey. What's a saint elsewhere? What are you even talking about? Okay, I'll read the script. Okay, I got an interview. Well, let's see how this goes. And then we, of course, stayed in L.A., and everything got pretty good after that.
Wow. What did it mean to your recognition level? Did people start actually, stopping you in the supermarket and that kind of thing?
Yeah, I had a taste of it before, because even though I played a deaf mute on Mary Hartman, I was on Mary Hartman, and that was one of those shows.
Another buzzy show. Yeah,
even though it was on Channel 11, it was like a network show, that kind of buzz and that kind of viewership. It was well watched. And so I was recognized a lot after that, and recognized a bit after Cat People, maybe, or the in-laws, maybe, playing those smaller parts. But after St. Elsewhere, it was different. You know, just going through an airport or going to the market, everything changed after that, and for the better.
Mm-hmm. Wow. And we have one thing in common, which is our admiration and friendship for the incredible Norman Lloyd.
Oh, I love that man.
Who is now past the century mark and is still going strong.
He's going to outlive all of us.
He is.
It's my personal theory. He's going to outlive all of us.
Leonard, I played some tennis today. Now, I used to play, of course, with Hitch. Hitch and I played a wonderful game of tennis. And, of course, Chaplin and I used to play.
God, is he great.
He's incredible. And at the age of 100, had a good part in Judd Apatow's Trainwreck with Amy Schumer.
Wasn't he great in Trainwreck?
Yes, he was. I mean, not only to be alive, but to be able to give that level of performance in an utterly contemporary movie.
He's amazing.
Yeah. One of a kind.
He
truly
sure
one of a kind.
Yeah. I loved his wife, Peg, too.
Oh, yes.
A great couple for many, many years.
Wonderful woman, yes. Now, another stream of your multifaceted career has been your work with Christopher Guest. And it begins really, before Christopher Guest, kind of, because you're in This Is Spinal Tap.
Correct, Rob
Reiner.
Which
is sort of the genesis of a lot of what followed.
Yes.
Tell us a little about that and what the beginnings were like.
I bought the first copy of a magazine called The National Lampoon in 1970 and was just very smitten with it. I thought it was great. And I started to hear they had live shows. They had this show Lemmings, and then they had the National Lampoon radio dinner show, and I knew this woman, this wonderful young lady named Alyssa Guest, and she had a brother who apparently had a lot to do with the National Lampoon radio dinner album, and I think he had a lot to do with Lemmings. And so I went, oh, wow, I got to meet Chris, and I met him and was just blown away by his talent. He was so smart and funny, and we hit it off. He was also friends with my dear friend, the actor Bruno Kirby.
Mm-hmm.
So he and Bruno were friends, and we spent time together, all of us. And then pretty soon, and Rob and I have been friends for many years, and they were doing this Spinal Tap movie, and they said, Ed, you play the drums, don't you? Yeah, I play the drums. We'll get a kit for you. Do you have a kit still? No, I haven't had a kit in years, but we'll get your drum kit and just come in. We're going to do kind of a flashback thing. It's some footage to try to raise money to do this movie. It's just part of they didn't have the term sizzle reel back then, but that's what it was.
Mm-hmm.
So we did that, but it was old kinescope-looking footage. So when they actually did the movie, they went, we can still use the thing that you shot. You don't have to come and shoot it again. You're done, and we'll put it in the movie. And that started. And then when I saw Waiting for Guffman come out, I was so proud of what Chris did and so smitten by that movie. But then to get a call after that and to be asked into that existing troupe with Fred Willard, our dear friend Fred, and all the many wonderful people, Parker Posey and, Eugene Levy and Catherine O'Hara, to be invited into that group and be part of Best in Show, A Mighty Wind, and then For Your Consideration, and now Mascots. We have a show coming out on Netflix in October.
Tell us about that. Before I ask you questions, which I'm going to do, tell us about the new show.
The new show is called Mascots. It's about team mascots, think the San Diego Chicken, though it's not any specific real mascot like that. It's a bunch of fictional mascots created by Chris and Jim Pittick, who wrote the treatment. They do all the heavy lifting.
Mm-hmm.
They write the 25-page treatment, and then they invite Jane Lynch and me and Mike Hitchcock and Fred Willard and everybody in. We just have a party, basically, and they roll cameras, and then Chris does all the work after that again and edits it, But it's just this wonderful time with great improv actors and me who tries to hold his own with these people. You know, my job is to just be like the Sphinx and not crack up.
Yes.
I'm the desk
which
clerk.
Which you do brilliantly.
You're very kind.
But being
the
straight man, especially to those people, you have just named some of the funniest people that have ever existed, truly. And I don't say that. My dad and I always say we don't like hype. We don't like hearing best movie of the year, best movie of the decade, best. But truly, the people that you're with in all the Christopher – they're just the – Marino – all of them. Catherine O'Hara, like Eugene Levy, all of them. And you being able –
You're very kind to include me in that group. But
well, but you are in that group.
You're in that group.
Now I have to say, because just not too many months ago, I revisited A Mighty Wind. And – not only did I fall in love with it all over again, which I did, every time you utter a Yiddish word,
oh God,
I just crack
up. Oh, it's
up.
So funny.
There's something about you and you have a Nordic appearance, as you know.
I know. How did Chris allow me to do that? I'm playing a Swedish American guy, and suddenly I'm spouting Yiddish. Why? I'm not sure it even makes. Well, I guess it makes some sense. I'm trying to ingratiate myself to Bob Balaban's character and one of those Goyish guys who's trying to spout Yiddish and get him to like me. And so I just did that for one take, and Chris said that was great. Do it again. We're going to move in a closer. Thanks, Ed. You know, he thought it was fine. I thought, he's going to let me do that? Okay, great.
And is that how it works? It's kind of a trial by fire?
Yeah, you bring stuff in, but he doesn't blindly approve anything. You know, like, uh-huh. Oh, I'm going to try Yiddish in this thing, even though I'm the Swedish guy.
Yeah.
You know, one time I went up to Chris and I said, you know, I'm playing this producer. It was for A Mighty Wind. It was lunch hour, having a meeting, playing this producer, and he used to keep his glasses like this. And what I just did was I tilted my glasses and hung them from one of my ears, so they're askew. They're kind of below my chin.
This is now a sight gag on radio.
Yeah.
So, yes.
Yeah, go ahead. So I have them hanging like this in this weird thing from one of my ears. I said, but the guy had his glasses like this, and then when he needed to look at something, he'd put them up like this, and I just put them up in my face properly. I said, I think that would be a good thing for this character. He said, that's fantastic. That would be great in the Carrot Top movie, but not in my movie yet. Get some lunch and go to wardrobe. Leave me alone. He doesn't blindly allow anything.
So, but that's what it's about. And, of course, we don't really want to know too much about how these movies come about. That's revealing too much of the magician's trick. But they are... You have a blueprint you work with.
Right.
And then you improvise.
Right.
But then he guides and steers.
Boy, does he ever, yeah, with his keen eye.
Mm-hmm.
For Best in Show, for instance, I play the hotel manager. What it has is Jerry and Cookie Fleck try to check into the hotel. The credit card doesn't work. So that all I got to do is try to be a real manager at a real hotel and try to bring some level of reality to it and mm-hmm. be like the Sphinx when they start in with their business, you know, just be like Easter Island when they both start in with whatever they're doing. And
we'll alert the kitchen that you're here.
Oh, you remember.
And
that's very good.
I can recite every line of yours from that film because it is one of my favorite movies ever.
And then Michael Higgins comes up with Michael McKean, and they're a couple, and they have their pillows that they're bringing in, all their stuff they're bringing up to the room. And it's like, again, I just got to just keep it straight, be a Marine, don't crack. And my job.
But you say things like, I don't know why they felt like sacrifice. I don't know why they felt like they needed to sacrifice the goat. We'll never get the smell out. It's just, as
you're
I
very kind,
it's
Jessica.
Just
thank
so
you,
damn
you.
Funny. But that is, as I say, the ability to be a straight man and the fact that you really do. You are an incredibly talented actor, and in this film, if I didn't know you, I would think this is just a really lovely manager who's just trying to make
the best
of everything, and, you know, there's no complaints, we'll figure it out, and you just die.
Bless your heart.
You just die. You do.
Now, you have another kind of fan base because of your voice work. Well, you've done a lot of voice work for cartoons.
I have.
Over the years. But I think the Batman animated series is the one that
Yeah, I did a few episodes of that. I can't remember the titles of the episodes, but it was I was a hapless victim in one case. In another case, I think I was a bad guy. But I did that back in the early 90s. So mm-hmm. And that's they're still running those somewhere.
Yes, they are. Nothing goes away now.
No,
nothing
it doesn't.
Goes
no.
away,
no.
for better or worse.
Somebody sent me a link the other day. You mentioned Mannix. Somebody sent me a link from the Mannix. Leonard, I don't think I saw it when it was on originally. I might have, but I don't think so. So I saw it. I couldn't believe it. I brought my daughter down because it was terrifying because she's a young lady, but she's like my clone. It looks like her, but somebody tried to make it look like a boy.
Oh,
gosh. It was terrifying for
That's
her.
That's very
terrifying.
Funny. Very funny and terrifying. Do you play the same role in every episode of Mascots? I don't want to know too much.
Oh, Mascots is just a one-off. It's a movie, a Netflix movie, actually.
Oh, it's a movie.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, sorry.
Good. Oh, well, that's a good idea.
Yeah, I agree.
Don't bleed it dry.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It'll be me and Jane Lynch and the usual suspects, you know, Mike Hitchcock and Michael Higgins and Fred Willard and Jim Pittick. It's very funny.
I told Fred on multiple occasions that if he would just let me live in his pocket, I'd really appreciate it.
Yeah.
I just want to be near Fred all the time.
I agree. I want the same.
I just want to be near
And Parker
Fred.
Posey gives a performance in this show, Mascots. She's an amazing actress. She really is amazing.
She is.
She's one of my favorite talents out there, and she is so good in this. The way she looks, it's like, it was breathtaking when she came in to load up. Everybody load up in the van. We're kind of, I think that's Parker over there. She's getting in. Oh, my God. She has a look in grabber.
All right. That's
and she
it.
Doesn't disappoint after that.
That's all right. That lays the groundwork then. We're ready. Roll it now. You're one of the few people who has ever been directed by Jack Nicholson.
Yeah.
That's
because
correct.
You were in, I think, one of the two movies he directed.
Yeah, he did Drive, he said, and then he did Going South.
Oh, he did the Two Jakes, his movie?
Two Jakes, of course. Drive, he said, yeah, he's done three.
Right.
Drive, he said.
You were in Going South.
Yeah. Correct.
So tell us about that experience, if you would.
It was fantastic. It's the only time I've done this in my nearly 50 years of being an actor. I called him up because he was a friend. I said, Jack, zero pressure, but if there's anything of any little part in it, I would sure love to be in the movie. I know you're doing a movie, but again, if it doesn't work out, there's no bad vibes, but I would sure like to be in it. Well, Beggs, let's see what we got. There's a character called Whitey. I think you might be able to rise to the occasion playing somebody called Whitey. What do you think, Beg? You got it in you? So I got to play Whitey in Going South. He did it as a favor. He just, you know, well, maybe they even wrote the part. I can't remember what they did, but it was Alan Mandel and Charles Shire wrote the script. John Shaner wrote the original script, and then it was adapted by Charles Shire and Alan Mandel, and it was a great time. John Belushi was on it, and the great
Christopher Lloyd
was in it. Mary Steenburgen, it was her first role. Jack had discovered her in New York, I believe, and wanted her for the movie. I don't think she had done anything before that, and boy, is she good. She's a dear friend of mine and a wonderful actress, dear friends for many years.
You did a wonderful – if you folks are enjoying listening to this or if you're a fan of Ed's, as we are, you really should listen to the conversation that Ed did with Mark Maron on Mark's show.
Oh, you're very kind.
WTF. No, it was a fascinating conversation.
Amazing the kind of level that he gets into.
Yes. He has an interviewing skill or a conversational skill that I really envy and admire. And he's able to get into personal issues that I always feel funny, you know, approaching and bringing up. But you talk quite openly about some of your addictions, some of your habits now long gone. But the thing that I took away from that was, and you said it with some amazement too, that you were drinking at the time. And you're on location in Santa Fe. Correct me if I'm getting this right or wrong.
We were in Durango, Mexico.
Durango. And John Belushi told you to take it easy on the drinking.
Yeah, I was too far gone for John. But John said, you got to cool it, man. You're going to kill yourself. He pulled me out of the bar. He and Judy Belushi, his beautiful wife, Judy, grabbed me by the collar. Pulled me out. You got to see some of the sights of Durango. You're not going to sit here in the lobby of the El Presidente Hotel and drink yourself to death. We're taking you out for a drive. John did that. So you can tell how far gone I was.
Man.
I was a piece of work.
I mean, that's a statement. You know, that's a statement that gives one pause.
Yeah.
That was the man who
No question.
Yeah.
My dad's the same way with Wheat Thins. We have to take the box away. You need to stop.
I'm already.
You need to stop.
It's the reduced fat Wheat Thins.
No, no more Wheat Thins.
All right. Okay. All right. If you say so.
I wish it was just Wheat Thins with me.
I know. I know. He can't help it. He's adorable and a goody two shoes. He didn't mean it. It's just how he was born.
You're in a film that I like. We're going to talk a little about movies that we both like.
Yeah.
And you're in a film that I'm sure very few people have seen because it got very little release, but it's most striking in an original film by Bruce Wagner called I'm Losing You.
Yes. Wasn't that an interesting movie, Leonard?
Yes, indeed. Mm. To be frank, I haven't seen it since it was new, but it made a deep impression on me at the time. And Frank Langella is in it, and he's wonderful, of course.
Yes, he is.
Rosanna Arquette.
Yes.
Good, good cast. And do you have positive memories of that?
Very positive. Bruce Wagner is a very bright guy. Have you met Bruce?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He's a very bright, very authentic, very, he's a very different mind. Nothing conventional about Bruce. Mm-hmm. And he directed me in that in a way that made no sense to me, but I did it. And when I saw it, it was wonderful. Mm-hmm. What he had me do, the way he had me come out, mopping myself with a little towel, and the way he's asked me to read the lines and what have you, I went, this is just not at all intuitive for me, but it's mm-hmm. Bruce Wagner telling me to do it, so I'm going to do it. When I saw it, I was like, whoa, did that work? That was like a character I'd never played anybody like that, and it was totally real and totally believable, and it was all Bruce Wagner that wrote it, and directed it and got extracted like a dentist, a performance out of me. He was going to do the usual kind of, what I pick from my bag of tricks. It would have been fine, but Bruce is an original.
Yeah.
He really is. He's
yes,
very
indeed.
Talented.
Mm-hmm. I'm glad you feel that way about him and the film.
Yeah, I love the movie.
And I recommend that of you. So worth seeking out. As we do often here, we ask our guests, if you have films you want to tout, films that you think are good that maybe didn't get the audience they deserved first time around.
Did Punch Drunk Love get the love it deserved?
Well, from Paul Thomas Anderson has a following, as you know. And so
did he with that movie? I'm wondering.
Yeah, that was an iffy movie because people, certainly the Adam Sandler fans, didn't get what they would expect from him.
Right, but what a movie.
Mm-hmm.
Like all his movies. I love every single movie that P.T. Anderson has done, but this one I just have a special place in my heart for because I guess it's just my group of friends. I didn't hear enough people talking about it at the time or thereafter. It's this movie. Oh, yeah, I got to see that, I hear usually from people.
Mm-hmm.
But it's so damn good,
yeah.
As is everything he does. He just can do no wrong.
Well, he's an original.
He sure is.
He's another one, a true original.
The Master. Wow.
Yeah, well.
Joaquin Phoenix.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, what a performance.
Yeah. And what discipline to be able to do. I mean, it's glib to be able to say, oh, he lost weight for the role. But it goes beyond that.
Beyond that.
It's
he becomes a character that I've seen. I've seen that guy in the world in my 60-some-odd years.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The character that he plays in The Master, Joaquin does, and he immerses himself. And having worked with him briefly, you don't call him Joaquin when you're on the set. You call him by his character's name.
Oh, really?
He's very much immersive.
Mm-hmm.
And whatever he does, it's working. So
yeah.
I would never question any of it.
Yeah.
If he wants to help standing on his head to prepare, I'll help get his legs in the air, whatever it takes to do it.
Sure.
He should keep doing it because there's nobody like Joaquin Phoenix.
Mm-hmm. Nope. Another one-off. Have you seen Two Lovers?
No, I have not.
It's a film that he made for James Gray several years ago. He works a lot with James Gray, and We Own the Night and The Yards. They've collaborated several times, but...
Shame on me. I haven't seen any of those movies, and I've heard they're good, and I'm going to see them now on your recommend.
It's him and Gwyneth Paltrow.
Yes. Yeah. Gwyneth Paltrow and Vanessa
Two
Shaw.
Oh, boy.
About a kind of a nevishy guy who's had emotional issues growing up in, I think, Coney Island or Brighton Beach, New York, who's torn between two incredibly different women in his life. One who's been there all along, is of the same neighborhood, the same stripe, the same background, and a kind of a golden girl, played by Gwyneth Paltrow, who represents everything he's never experienced in his life. And there's no irony in the movie. It's not satiric. It's not in any way critical of its characters. It's just presenting this guy and his dilemma, and it's so beautifully done.
I'm going to see it soon.
Unfortunately, part of why a lot of people didn't see it is that when he was supposed to be doing the promotion for Two Lovers,
yeah, that's right.
That was when he did his whole shtick, when he was doing his movie, where he said, I'm quitting acting. And
I'm going to become a rock star or something.
In fact, it may be that night he was on David Letterman.
That's exactly what it was.
He was supposed to be promoting that movie.
He was supposed to be promoting Two Lovers, but instead that's the sort of infamous now interview with Letterman where he had the scraggly beard and everything he was answering was kind of like this. And David Letterman kept saying, is this a joke? Are you doing this on purpose or not? So unfortunately, this really lovely film didn't get the press because he was in the middle of doing this method project.
I'm going to see it now.
But God bless him. He's a brilliant talent.
He's an extremely talented guy.
Any others? I'll stop pumping you if...
No, what other movies that I don't think have gotten enough love? There's others.
Of the Christopher Guest movies, For Your Consideration hasn't achieved, the same status as some of the others, and I am very fond of that movie.
Catherine
O'Hara's performance in that.
She is brilliant in that. Brilliant in that. I thought she had some sort of incredible makeup job done to the way she makes her face look at the end.
Right.
That's all her doing that with muscles. Did you know that?
Oh,
that's her just doing that. She could do that right here in this room for us. That's what I've heard, and I don't doubt it.
Man.
It was told to me by people who work with her.
No.
But here's another one then, a Chris Guest movie before those improv movies. It's with Martin Short and others.
The Big Picture.
There's another one that's a very interesting movie.
Kevin Bacon stars as a young filmmaker who's just graduated from college and won an award, I think, for one of his student films, and is being ushered into the movie business and the Hollywood business. Well, Martin Short in that, if you'll excuse the expression, it's pee in the pants funny.
Yeah.
It is.
He is in that movie. He's so ridiculously funny in that movie.
He's one of the funniest people I've ever known.
He's one of the funniest people ever.
Ever.
He said, I listened to his audiobook of his autobiography, which is quite a wonderful experience.
I'm going
to
get that. I can't get enough of that guy.
Oh, it's really good.
He gave an award to Steve Martin, mm-hmm. the Motion Picture Academy, when he mm-hmm. got the Governor's
yeah.
Award.
Mm-hmm.
He presented it to him, and you thought, he's got to be done now. He gets on a roll, and you go, okay, that's it. He's had six killer jokes, and you're weeping, and you're pounding the table, and then he has six more in a row, quickly. It's like, stop, I can't breathe. It was breathing. I don't know. I'm amazed they didn't kill more people that night. Well, the Altacocker's there at the Academy.
The Altacocker's are falling over. It's not good.
Unbelievable. He's incredibly funny.
He sure
now,
is. He says he now regrets not taking billing for that wonderful cameo that he does in The Big Picture.
Yeah.
He did it as a lark and as a favor and had a great time doing it.
Yeah.
But there's no sign of his name anywhere officially associated with it, and it should be.
Now, should be.
You're in a film with him that is one of my favorite movies, and I've talked about it on our show before, Get Over It. Get Over It is one of my favorite movies because it is – first of all, it's Ben Foster – I have been a fan of Ben Foster since I was a kid because he was on a TV show. He was on a TV show called Fast Forward, and I watched it. No, of course you didn't, because it was just for – I'm 30, and it was on when I was probably 10, 11, 12.
Right.
And I had the biggest crush on him. I just loved him. And then I watched everything else he did. So then when he did Get Over It, you've combined – I'm a musical theater nerd. You've now combined musical theater – Ben Foster, and you, which never hurts, Swoozy Kurtz, Kill Me Now, but Martin Short as the drama teacher.
Oh my God!
Who is doing a musical version of A Midsummer Night's Dream? It is just one of my favorite films. I show it to people all the time because it just kills me. And you and Swoozy Kurtz play Ben Foster's parents, who are sex therapists, relationship therapists, but also sex therapists.
Right.
And he's there as you're saying, do you need a condom? Are you okay? Should we go? You bail him out of jail for indecent exposure and say, do we want to get an ice cream?
That's right.
You know,
I'm remembering all this now. We went up to Canada and did that.
It is truly, it's one of my favorite films.
90s, I think, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. And I show it to friends all the time because Mila Kunis is in it. Zoe Saldana is in it, small parts. Kirsten Dunst is the other lead.
That's right, Kirsten.
Melissa Sage Miller. You've got Shane West. You've got Colin Hanks.
Oh, that's right.
Colin Hanks is in the film.
He's so good.
It's just the whole movie. It's this wonderful cast of people, but truly, Martin Short.
Oh, my.
Martin
he kills.
Short is. And that's one, another one I quote constantly because it cracks me up. And then it has this, you know, phenomenal cast. And you and Swoozy could not be a better team.
I love that woman.
You could
She's
not be a better
act.
Team, She's the
great.
Two of
such
you.
Such a dear lady.
She's great. How are your antenna? I know as an actor, you know, you get a job, you look at your part, you look at the people you're going to work with, and you say yes or no. And am I hungry this week? And you say yes or no. And sometimes it works out, and it's a great film or a funny show or a terrific TV show, and sometimes not. Now, I saw a movie a few years ago called What's Your Number?
Right.
That I thought was...
Anna Faris, Chris Evans.
Yeah. That I thought was really fun.
Me too. I did too. I liked that movie.
That movie a lot.
I was surprised it didn't do well.
Oh, it didn't do well. It got dumped on.
I know.
People just despised that movie, and I don't know why.
I don't know why either. There's one that should be tops of my list. I just happened to be in it, so I wasn't thinking in those terms.
Yeah.
But that's a wonderful movie, very funny, very interesting, quite original, and didn't get any love and should have.
No.
Yeah. Go figure.
It's a film that we saw together. I always say that seeing a picture, whether it's with my, I'm a picture. See this, I'm 100 years old. People don't realize. You go to the pictures. when I see a movie with just my dad, then there's his opinion and mine. Then when I see a movie with my mom, my dad and I, you now have three very different opinions. So it's fascinating to me to see how we all respond.
Yes.
And What's Your Number, which is about a young woman who is told that she slept with too many men. You're only allowed to sleep with 20 men.
Yes, some Cosmo magazine.
Once you go over that, you're a woman of the night.
That's right.
And so she has to try and pick of that 20. And Chris Evans is in it, and he's just delightful. And it is something where we both said, well, that's fun. And why did people crush it?
Well, maybe we can get a little groundswell then.
Yeah.
By mentioning it today.
So.
Maybe we'll give it the love that it needs and deserves. When you were starting out, Ed, are there people who you observed on the set, other actors or directors, who really made an impression on you and a meaningful impression on you? You've worked with so many, many, many people.
You know, I got my first dose of education on a set and how to behave from my dad for those years before I worked.
Mm-hmm.
Ed, Mr. Begley, we're ready for you. And he would not walk to that set to get in front of the camera. He would run. And he had short legs.
Mm.
You know, he was shorter than me. But he never made them wait. He was always totally professional. The focus guy, if I could just have another one. No, go ahead. He would help the guy, the first assistant cameraman with this. The sound guy needed it a little louder at that point because he couldn't get the boom in because of a shadow. His job was to do the best work, first and foremost, that was humanly possible, what the director wanted, the writer intended, and all of that. That was number one job. But number two job, a close second, was helping every department.
Mm.
You know, and never cost them money, and time equals money, so never cost them time, which is money. And he was just totally professional. So I got that from him, and that's the way I behaved. Let me be honest. I'm a fine actor, but I'm not the best actor I know by any stretch of the imagination. But I show up on time, and I do a good job and try to make things easy on every department. And that people remember that, and I work a lot because of that.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, that's as it should be.
Yeah.
As it should be, and as it sensibly is in the case of someone like you. Ed, what a treat to sit and just chat and shoot the breeze.
You too, Leonard.
We've
you
enjoyed
too,
it
Jesse.
So much. And I hope you continue to thrive and prevail, both professionally and personally. And I hope we'll all take lessons from you, life lessons from you. What you just said about your father's professionalism, that's something everybody could pay attention to and should pay
it's
attention
to. It's a master class, and it's what a lot of actors need to hear right now.
Right.
A lot of people. Yeah, people. People in general.
Just people in general.
Being responsible for themselves and for others.
And we'll take lessons from you and other and other means as well.
You're very kind,
because
buddy.
You, as I say, you don't just talk about our planet and our environment. You do something about it, and you've said more than once, you don't have to save the world. You're just one guy. You're just one girl. You don't have to save the world, but do something.
And, right back at you to see you on the subway that day buoyed my spirits. It was so great, Leonard. I'm so impressed with you.
So what have you got coming up? So Mascots, which is very exciting, Netflix. Do you know when that's going to happen?
That'll come in October.
Okay.
And then I heard by way of rumor that they're going to do more Maria Bamford show. Mm-hmm. I have some more Blunt Talk coming out.
Oh, with Patrick Stewart?
Yeah, Patrick Stewart. And we talked about Grace and Frankie, forgive me. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And what else? Oh, I did Chips with Dax Shepard and Michael Pena.
Really?
They're doing a film version of Chips.
Oh, that's
I'm in
fun.
That.
Oh, man. Oh,
wonderful. What do you play?
I don't want to give anything away, but I'll say this. I'm driving a car you wouldn't expect me to drive. It's very funny.
Okay.
Just me in the car right away was
all right.
For me amusing.
Okay. Got it.
Did Michael Pena get the Eric Estrada hair right?
Yeah, he gets everything right.
He's
great.
He is an amazing guy.
I love him.
He is.
And Dax is fantastic. What a dear lad.
And
he's so
where,
funny.
Where can people, your website, where can people follow you? Where can they get your products? Things like that.
Go to edbegley.com for lots of information about what I'm doing and have done. And follow me on Twitter, which is at edbegleyjr for Ed Begley Jr. At edbegleyjr. And what else? Facebook, I got a Facebook thing that I got to look up because it's like the official Ed Begley. Yeah, it's official Ed Begley Jr. on Facebook. That's what it is.
Okay.
There you go. He's everywhere.
He's everywhere. I'm not everywhere that you are, but I'm on Twitter at Leonard Maltin.
Yep.
And I am.
And you have an official Facebook page.
We have an official Facebook page. And you can find my movie reviews and musings of all sorts at leonardmaltin.com on the old fashioned World Wide Web. Thank you all for listening. We'll see you next week.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.